This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies. Our guest, Josh Brolin, played George W. Bush in the Oliver Stone film W. Brolin played Bush as a young man, drinking and carousing before finding Jesus and launching his political career. And he was also President Bush, surrounded by familiar White House figures, including Dick Cheney, played by Richard Dreyfuss, Donald Rumsfeld, played by Scott Glenn, and Karl Rove, played by Toby Jones. Josh Brolin followed his father, James Brolin, into acting. He had many roles in film and theater for more than 20 years, but became better known last year with attention-getting performances in American Gangster, In the Valley of Ella, and No Country for Old Men. Brolin currently co-stars in the film Milk, which is now in theaters. He's receiving critical acclaim for his supporting role as Dan White. I spoke to Josh Brolin last October, before the release of the film W. We started with a clip. Here Bush is preparing to take on the incumbent governor of Texas, Ann Richards. He's sitting on a park bench being coached by Karl Rove.
What do you say that George W. Bush is a rich, spoiled jerk? His wealth was produced by stock swaps and bailouts arranged by his daddy.
Ann Richards can badmouth me all she wants. I've created successful small businesses. I run a Major League Baseball team. I'm in touch with real people in Texas. Work with them every day at the ballpark. Talk with the fans, hot dog vendors. Get to know what they think. Because truly, deep down inside, you know I'm a guy like you. A guy you can trust.
Fabulous. Fabulous, Doug. What it all comes down to is who Joe Voter wants to sit down and have a beer with. And guess who that is?
Just remember, make mine non-alcoholic.
So, anything about the issues, you come to me first, I'll tell you what to say.
Oh, you're not going to tell me what to say, Carl. I'm going to tell you what I want, because you're the word man. This campaign starts and ends with me and what I think.
You got it, W. I'm just a little fairy putting down a little magic dust for you.
Carl, this time I'm going to out Texas, Texas.
Well, Josh Brolin, welcome to Fresh Air. When you thought about taking this role on of George W. Bush, I wonder, did it seem risky? What did you consider in deciding whether to say yes?
When somebody like Oliver Stone, with the resume that he has, came to me and said, "I see George W. in you," it was disconcerting, to say the least. You know, I didn't quite understand why and what, and even when he told me, you know, you guys grew up on a ranch together, you have followed in the same footsteps as your fathers, very strong mothers, you know, whatever cosmetics he had read in the press or... And I still didn't get it. And, you know, without reading the script, I was very reactionary. I imagined it to be something, you know, in the present and having to do with the war. And it wasn't until I read it that I finally understood, you know, it was one of the great acting challenges for me, at least up until this point, to follow this guy's life from 21 years old to 58 years old. It put me into... a fear that I enjoy, which is, can I live up to this character, as opposed to my first reaction, which was looking down on it, saying, why would I want to do that?
Talk a little bit about getting Bush down physically. What did you have to work on?
There was everything. You know, I watched him, I watched videos and watched the difference between when he was tired and not tired, when he was in public, when he was in private, how he was with... you know, Tony Blair, as opposed to some prime minister or premier over in the.
And what differences did you see?
How he held himself, how he compensated, how erect he was, how, you know, his hands. I don't know why he had this kind of, he has this apish thing that he does, where the back of his hands are always facing forward, which I thought was really interesting. He's always moving, this kind of ADD thing. What we do in the movie, and you've seen the movie, was we chose to eat a lot. To be busy during scenes, which, you know, if you look at something like No Country for Old Men, it's the opposite.
Right.
You know, it's all about the quiet. It's all about how do you convey ideas through subtleties, whereas Bush, I think, is the opposite. You know, there's a lot of talking going on. There's a lot of movement going on.
Yeah, well, you know, the film opens with a scene of you in the Oval Office with the cast of characters, you know, Cheney and Rumsfeld and Powell. And it's the scene where you're coming up with the phrase axis of evil for the State of the Union address. And I have to say that when you see you opening up in that scene, you get a sense that you really nailed this. I mean, it really looks like George W. Bush conducting a meeting and making a decision. But, you know, there's a difference between doing an impression of somebody and then inhabiting the character. And I wonder if that was a struggle for you to be to get his mannerisms and voice so familiar that then you could kind of forget about it and then interpret him as a character.
No, I know what you're saying. And, yeah, I mean, you never know until it's out there, because especially with this character, you're not just doing one voice. You're not just doing the present or 2002 or to 2004, you know, this kind of tight diaphragm, breathy, you know, thing that he has that we all know so well. You know, there's a lot of different voices in this movie. There's, you know, how Western is he when he's 21 years old and he's in his second year of Yale or his first year at Yale? You know, how much was he affected and influenced by, you know, Eastern dialects? Or did he fight it completely and actually the Western dialect came out even more because he wanted to overcompensate because he wasn't having a good time during his school years? Or, you know what I mean? So I think, you know, part of what you're asking is, you know, there was a, there was a moment where when I finally came down to the voice that we know so well, and it was the scene where HUD walks in when he's when W's governor and he's become governor, and he says, you know, hello, you know, HUD, come on in, why don't you take a seat? And that's when we did the full-blown voice for the first time. And when we went through it, after they said cut, you know, all of us, me and Oliver and the whole crew, started cracking up because it was nerve-wracking. You know, obviously I want to do a good job and I want it to be accurate and I don't want to do necessarily some caricature of it, but you want it to feel right. And that partially comes with body language, that partially comes with not overdoing it, it partially comes with subtleties and breath and voice. And so, you know, as you can hear in my voice right now, this is what I went through every minute of every day, not knowing. So
you said HUD
came
question.
In? Don't ask me any more questions.
All right. You said HUD came in the room. You're referring to who?
Stacy Keach.
Oh, okay. And he Stacey was Keach. Playing the minister. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay. Just a couple more things about some of the demands of playing this role. You eat a lot in this movie. I mean, you have conversations where you're eating, and I noticed that it's not these things where people sort of pretend to eat or have a plate in front of them. You're really downing the sandwich. And I wondered, did you get stuffed in multiple retakes?
Well, you know, I mean, it lent to, I told you, Oliver and I had made the decision that we want him to keep moving, you know, and this kind of ADD quality. And finally, you know, I had lost, again, just to look younger, not because it sounds cool, because it's no fun, but, you know, you lose weight, and I cut my hair, and to be able to look 21, because I was very afraid that I wouldn't, being 40 years old. And right after that first week of the youngest scenes, from 21 to 25, I had then 8-9 weeks to gain as much weight as I could, as fast as I could, and my body was so used to losing weight that it was very, very difficult. We were eating banana and avocado shakes, about 12 a day. And then I was going to McDonald's right before I went to sleep. So my sleep pattern changed. I felt awful. And wait, what was your question again? No, I was getting to it. What was the point?
How could you stay?
Well, the eating,
eating so much on the set. Yeah.
So the scene with Richard Dreyfuss, I ended up eating 15 sandwiches. Which was horrible. I mean, it was horrible. But it was good because I was forced to do it in the scene, which, you know, lent to me gaining another, I'm sure, 3 or 4 pounds for that day.
Josh Brolin recorded in October. He played George W. Bush in the Oliver Stone film W. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our interview with Josh Brolin. His films include W, No Country for Old Men, and the new film, Milk. Now, I read that you are, of course, the son of the actor, James Brolin, and I read that you grew up on a ranch, and I was trying to picture whether your childhood was more Hollywood or more ranch life. Which was it? Or both?
Well, my mother, no, was definitely more ranch life. My parents, I would assume, consciously kept me away from Hollywood. My mother was very distrustful of Hollywood and those types. who I guess is me now. I don't know. I was raised in Paso Robles, Templeton, California, and we had 65 horses, you know, give or take a few at different times. And My father went back and forth to Los Angeles, and my mother's from Texas, and she loved the country, and she didn't want to spend any time in the city. So I'm very grateful for that. I did the same thing for my kids. My kids grew up about 3 miles from where I grew up, and it was nice to be able to keep them out of Los Angeles.
But so you grew up on a ranch, but you found your way into acting, you know, as a young adult. Did you always think you'd want to follow your dad's footsteps?
No, not at all. I was very against it. When my friends found out that that's what I finally wanted to do, or was willing to experiment with, they were all very surprised. Now, law was something that I loved. I loved debate. I loved law, and through high school, taking Youth and Society and Law 1 through Law 6 or whatever it was, from freshman to a senior. Acting was, but that's, you know, there's a connection there. I'm seeing now, obviously, between law and being a lawyer and being an actor. No, I wasn't interested at all. And then around 11th grade, I had the opportunity to take an acting class in school. It was an improv class, an improvisational class. And that's, you know, when I finally said, yeah, I'll do it and see what it's like. And I'm just out of curiosity. And I wasn't interested because I saw my father, you know, he'd have money 1 year and he wouldn't have any the next year, and he would have some the next year. So the fluctuation, no security. And but when I did it, the improvisational, I don't know, experimenting with voice and character and all that was really a turn on for me. It was like a drug. You could really lose yourself and be writing your own dialogue, and the whole delving into storytelling was really profound and interesting.
You've had a string of very well-received performances in the last few years. I mean, you did American Gangster with Ridley Scott, where you played the corrupt cop, and then you were another cop in The Valley of Elah with Paul Haggis. And then there is, of course, No Country for Old Men, and I thought we should talk about that a little bit, the Coen Brothers film. And I thought we'd begin by listening to a little bit of you from that film. This is your character, Llewellyn Moss, who has found $2 million in cash after a drug shootout and is trying to get away with it. But a very, very scary killer, Anton Chigurh, who's played by Javier Bardem, is after you. You've sent your wife off to live to her mom's place in Odessa, and in this conversation, Bardem has caught up with you on the telephone. Let's listen.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
All right.
You know she won't be there.
It doesn't make any difference where she is.
So what are you going up there for?
You know how this is going to turn out, don't you?
Nope.
I think you do. So this is what I'll offer. You bring me the money and I'll let her go. Otherwise, she's accountable. Same as you. That's the best deal you're gonna get. I won't tell you you can save yourself, because you can't.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring you something, all right? Decided to make you a special project of mine. You ain't going to have to come look for me at all.
And that's Josh Brolin with Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men. You know, what's interesting about you in this character, I mean, you play this he's a welder who lives out in rural West Texas, who happens upon this chance for a score. I mean, you're on the screen a lot in this movie, often without lines. There's just a lot of shots of you observing and figuring out stuff. How is acting different when you're really not doing it verbally so much?
It was, for me, it was a great challenge, just because, you know, dialogue is, especially coming from the theater, a lot of the work that I've done is dialogue motivated. So this was a nice challenge to be able to figure out how to convey ideas through body language and through grunts and groans. I mean, I remember I had... There was a moment where I find the money. Llewellyn finds the money, and he opens up the satchel and looks down, and he looks at the dead guy, and he looks up, and I actually had a full-blown conversation with the Coens about adding, mm-hmm, because there's this dialogue, and to me, in his head, about should I take it? You know, should I go with this? Should I not go with this? There was this constant dialogue in his head that he would answer monosyllabically. And so we had, you know, the fact that we had a conversation about going, mm-hmm, or mm, you know, seemed a little ridiculous to me. But that was the nature of the movie. And I liked it. It was a nice experiment and seemed to work, which I was very happy about.
You know, I read that you have had a pretty serious side career as a day trader in stocks. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a point in my career that I didn't, I mean, I knew the stock market and I knew how to play a little bit. I didn't know a lot. I was more interested in it. I was always a good math student when I was a kid in school. And there came a point in my career where I didn't like really the jobs that I had to do in order to pay for my kids' school or, you know, whatever, put food on the table. And we sold our ranch about 4 years ago, and it gave me an opportunity to really focus on the work that I wanted to do and not work when I didn't have to and just do theater and keep playing with the craft in any way that I could. But the movies, you know, they're indelible. It was important to me to be able to look back on my resume and like what I saw and remember the experiences with fondness. You know, and so during that time, I met a guy, Brett Markinson, and he really taught me a lot about trading, and we started a company together, Market Probability, and we've done very well. I mean, just in the last, and obviously we're not trading right now because of the uncertainty, but before this whole debacle started to happen, you know, we were 73% for the year, so we were doing very, very well.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to think of two pursuits more disparate than acting, where you're, you know, delving into the human soul, and then all the kind of technical analysis that comes with being an effective stock analyst or trader.
I see only the connections. I don't see the... Okay. I can see how you would see that it would be on opposite ends of the spectrum, but I see it like golf, you know? You have to technically figure out exactly the swing and how to hold your hands and, you know, visualize this and do all this, and there's so many things to learn technically with golf. But when it comes down to it, when you're finally going to take that swing, you have to completely erase it all from your mind and just let it happen. Otherwise, if you're thinking too much, you won't even be able to hit the ball.
When I look at some of the roles you've had, like an American Gangster, where you play the corrupt cop, and Valley of Ela, where you play another cop, and then No Country for Old Men, where you play Llewellyn Moss, it seems to me that you bring a sort of classic sort of masculinity, kind of the, I don't know, a Robert Mitchum sort of feel to some of these roles. And I'm wondering, you just so easily play a tough guy. Do you think of yourself as a tough guy?
No, not at all. And I don't think anybody who knows me thinks of me as a tough guy. I think the public perception is that. Uh-huh. But these roles, Bush, is Bush a tough guy? You know, he may come across as a tough guy. What I like about these roles is the fallibility of the role. You know, with Llewellyn Moss, he comes across as a tough guy, but he turns out to be extremely fallible, you know, and he's very sensitive, especially with his wife. You know, why is he doing what he's doing? Because he wants to give his wife a better life. You know, that's wonderful. It's sensitive. It's, you know, but it is manly, I think, in the end. I think with Detective Truppo, you know, I worked very closely with Ridley on the arc of that role, and we wrote the ending together because I wanted him. He was such an extreme ego and so overconfident and so, you know, bloated with his own, you know, success, that I wanted it to be as severe at the end of, you know, the movie where he takes his own life, which was not how it was written. We did that. And then, you know, so the machismo factor is wonderful. It just, Mitchum was always macho from beginning to end.
Right.
I like the fallibility of machoism. I like how fragile it all is. I like exploring that. So I like to be able to fluctuate within that idea of things and turn it on its head, hopefully.
Well, it'll be great to see where you go next. Josh Brolin, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Josh Brolin recorded in October. He played George W. Bush in the Oliver Stone film W. He co-stars in the film Milk, which is currently in theaters. He's already received awards and nominations for his supporting role as Dan White.